Hello and welcome to the Critical Eye Asia podcast, Inspiring Leaders to Succeed. These podcasts are part review of a Critical Eye Asia roundtable that has just taken place, part expansion on some of the themes and broadening of some of the themes from that roundtable. One might call it bringing a critical eye to the subject, engaging on subject to the forefront of business leaders' minds, always topical, thought-provoking, and enabling you to learn from leaders and peers delivering amazing results. I'm Charlie Wagstaff, MD, and your host for this podcast. I'm one of the three co-founders at Critical Eye, where we bring leadership to life through others. Throughout my eclectic career within UK local government, heavy industry, largely in Europe, global VC, and now a global leadership development specialist. Clearly, my personal development has made me who and what I am. I've always loved learning in the hope that I can better cope with what life throws at me professionally and personally. We're going to examine the upside of risk for a board. There is an upside and there's lots of upside. And we're going to focus for you on three areas. We're going to be exploring the board's role in overseeing risk. How has that evolved? The questions non-executive directors, INEDs, should be asking about risk. How has that changed? And we'll come up with some pointers about what one should be looking at. And finally, the executive team's role in implementing a risk framework and also the relationship between the executive team and the board. Really, really delighted to have Anant join me, a global experienced senior banking professional who within those roles has accrued extensive advisory experiences, who now has a very exciting portfolio career, part of which is being a Critical Eye board mentor. Anant, great to have you introduce yourself. And where are you currently situated at the moment, by the way? I'm in London in a potting shed, I should say, at the end of the garden. Where are you?
Hi, Charlie. Good to be here. I'm based in Mumbai right now.
Great to have an intro from you, Anant, in terms of your background and obviously the context around the subject we're going to be discussing and exploring in a moment.
Great. Thank you, Charlie, for having me on this podcast. I was reflecting. I've spent 30 years as a corporate and investment banker. When I was finished with that, I never thought I'd be having this conversation with you on risk or with anyone on risk. I thought I was done with those days. But as you mentioned, I've taken on a portfolio career now. I'm on the boards of a few companies in different sectors, some highly regulated and some sort of private equity owned at present, which are in the process of doing an IPO. The topic of risk has come up time and again across the board. Happy to share my views on this. In addition to the board sort of roles, I also advise CDC, the UK government DFI, on their investments in India. And to keep myself young, I do advise a number of startups and try and gain from the disruptive technologies they're bringing to life and the impact they're having. So it's great to be here.
No, great to be here. And it's funny how full circle appears because I used to work with CDC and had responsibility for their businesses in Africa before setting up Critical Eye. So we're going to be exploring the subject of risk. And obviously the board's role is clearly very considerable in overseeing risk. So being a board member isn't easy. You have responsibility for a company, its strategy, but limited means on numerous occasions to really understand it. And that understanding is often mediated by the leadership team, by management. But before we develop that theme, what does risk mean for you?
Quite simply put, risk is any uncertainty. It's okay. As simple as that. Now, we need to keep it simple. It's really when things don't go according to plan or according to expectations.
Okay, good. And I suppose the other thing that we just listened and you participated in a roundtable on this subject. where it looked at a risk management framework. One of the things, obviously, is that with uncertainty, this is typically associated with a threat, but obviously that also can be an opportunity, and hopefully we might be able to look at that a little bit as well, that sort of interesting relationship. Any sort of highlights for you that came out of that roundtable at all? Before we go into the sort of the first area of our agenda, which would be about the board's role in overseeing risk at all, Annette?
Sure. I think what came out was the concept of risk and the risk register hasn't really changed, but what has changed is the items which are moved or appeared on top of that register now.
Yeah.
And among the key ones are relating particularly to how the board should operate and define organization purpose and culture, becoming increasingly important in a time when there's work from home. You don't see many people for days and days, and is it going to be here to stay or not? We don't know. So that's one. Second is around how do you measure the corporate culture and how do you align the culture with strategy, right? The risk culture. And the fact that there is a much stronger linkage, which is understood between risk and strategy, I think came out quite apparently. And I think the third thing was really related to data and how, given the whole world is moving towards digitization, a different way of working, what do you do with the oodles and oodles and terabytes of data that you have? And is it safe? How do you handle it? How do you manage it? How do you process it? How do you leverage it?
Yeah, and I think that the leveraging and how one uses that to make the right decision and a better decision is clearly very much the forefront of people's minds at the moment, and particularly when you're operating remotely. There is that access to data, but it's how one uses it and synthesizes it. I think there was a nice reference someone spoke about in terms of the three categories that one might look at the new types of risk. Is external risk, e.g. cyber, downside risk, which is very much the operational element, and strategic risk as a way to be able to look at risk, how much risk you could take on for an opportunity. And clearly, as we said earlier on, there are opportunities that risk can create. Very often, when an organization is looking at an opportunity, but the opportunity that is the trigger, and then they'll look at risk. Have you seen at all risk it being inversely used, where the risk register clearly does identify unwittingly, perhaps, where opportunities arise? Have you seen it being used to look at an opportunity?
I have. In fact, one of the companies I'm associated with, one of the sectors which got affected badly in the pandemic was the hotel industry.
Yeah.
There was no business travel. What do you do with the real estate? What do you do with the people? What do you do with the F&B capacity? And there were brainstorming sessions on, look, how do we use some of this? Now, we couldn't do much about room occupancy initially. But in terms of the F&B, I think there was just a concerted effort to start a new business line, luxury food delivery at home. And this actually took off quite nicely. During the pandemic and as things evolved, we realized leisure travel and staycations became more popular. So the positioning of this in terms of the packages offered, longer stays, the type of benefits for family along with somebody who's working, like things like obviously the free Wi-Fi facilities, free use of business centers, what have you, came about. And then there was this thing about social distancing. So how do you actually leverage it? There were a number of holiday homes which suddenly sprung up and, you know, remote locations and lakes and mountains and all over the place. A new business line emerged. Actually, a new business line emerged. And I think the target is to have about 100 odd properties in remote locations, which would allow for groups of, you know, 8 to 10 and 4 or 5 room sort of places to in a luxurious surrounding with the top quality service to offer that type of an environment. So yes, there was risk, but I think that it was sort of analyzed and one tried to make the most of it in terms of generating new business opportunity. That's just one example.
And do you see that, obviously that was in response to what might arguably be seen as a crisis. Do you see that as an ongoing method that can be used? So you see it within one particular industry. Do you see that being used elsewhere? And is it something that might be brought in elsewhere, do you think?
Look, I think some behavioral changes which have happened.
Yeah.
I think, are reasonably permanent, are here to stay, simply because people have realized, you know what, it's easy to do. Simple example is consumer buying behavior. And I come back to a point I made earlier about take buying things. You know, you typically go to a website, go to an Amazon or India Flipkart and place your order. It can be for the simplest of things. And how does this impact businesses and companies? Are you now loyal to a brand? So if you're used to buying a Gillette product or a particular type of t-shirt or a polo or a Tommy Hilfiger, are you going to buy that? Or are you going to go to the Amazon website and Amazon app and say, look, I want to buy a t-shirt. You may key in a Gillette or a polo or what have you, but it will give you many more options. What has happened is instead of you going and seeking out your brand that you've used to for so many years, you're now going to a different channel to acquire it. That throws up different risks for the existing companies. And the companies need to react. And what's happened worldwide now is this trend to D2C, which is direct-to-consumer sales, which I think has thrown up opportunity, obviously, for the companies, but also for logistics companies, fulfillment centers, applications which take order management processing, right? So there's a whole new host of opportunities which has come because of this, addressing the risk of change in buying behavior. So yes, it can be applied to other places, perhaps not all. One issue potentially is the work from home aspect we mentioned, financial services industry, where there's a strict guidelines, whether it's in asset management, trading, and so on things like insider trading, the need to record conversations if you're doing trades with customers and clients and so on. It's just much better done in an office atmosphere, which is why you see in Wall Street and sort of Main Street, people being asked to come back to office because it's just much easier from a compliance perspective to monitor and comply with guidelines. It's just safer for companies.
Interesting. Thank you very, very much indeed, Anand. Some very great examples there. So therefore, just I'm sure I'll come back, I suppose, to the agenda, is that the board and its role in determining risk and seizing the opportunity, what would your sort of observation be about how those boards need to operate and most effectively can operate?
Right. I think first is a recognition, as you mentioned earlier, that the risk management, risk conversations are higher up on the board agenda than before. Okay. Earlier it was around business performance, people strategy, but this is. The second thing is around the board ensuring that there is a process in place. So first of all, do you understand? Is there a process to actually identify these risks? Have you actually got a process to record, report, mitigate? So that needs to be done in a systematic fashion. But risk is dynamic, as we know. Risk register 10 years ago and risk register today is different, and it will continue to change as time goes on. So is there a process by which fresh inputs are given to people on the board? And this requires, in my view, a team effort, and team effort really being a combination of the board, the EXCO, and potentially one or two levels down, and having some sort of a framework in place where you are allowed to listen, debate, understand views from a broader section of the organization. And my view, if you're able to get this collaboration going well, this will really be the winning sort of way to handle risk management, both emerging risks and the opportunities arising from that.
How far does one go down? And is it an opportunity to bring the strategic risk and operational risk together so that then the two intermesh?
So look, I think the framework you would use is the enterprise risk management framework, which has a strategic, operational, financial risk. It's all sort of thrown into one bucket. So that is the framework itself does not change.
Yeah.
I think how far down do you go? I would say potentially EXCO minus one for sure, because that's when you have a decent amount of input coming in. And that's worked effectively in my experience. But in terms of how you look at risks, I think, look, if I'm not mistaken, the EY survey spoke about the categories and duration and how one of the best practices is look medium term, 5 years. I would agree with that, but I would also add you cannot ignore the short-term risks because that's where you know we need to sort of address them here and now. And the ability to sort of understand and debate that becomes very important. Having a proper risk management committee, risk management forum, which meets outside of the board cycle. The board cycle may be quarterly, But having these meetings outside of the normal board cycle, I think, would be much better, because the nature of discussions is very different. It gives people time and bandwidth.
Okay. And I think it might have been you that mentioned that on a strategy day, that the board with the ExCo minus two, that event where they were looking at risk and opportunity, essentially, was extremely beneficial. Just expand a bit why that was so useful, do you think?
So I was part of that. So I chair a board where we have and we hadn't met for 18 months, right? We said, look, enough, let's, meet. There were about 30 odd people in a very large open conference room. So we were socially distanced. But having said that, I think this was the first time, this private equity owned company.
Okay.
In the private equity owned company, there is a strong interaction between the private equity company as well as the founders, so the sort of initial promoters. But I think this is the first time that we had ExCo minus one level come in. And it was a very useful conversation, because a lot of the work here is done on the ground, and they're seeing, they're the coalface. And those ideas germinating up in terms of opportunities. And this is more about opportunities than risks. Risks, I think by then we'd all sort of knew what the risks were. And in this particular sector, it was about more opportunity, because it was logistics, express logistics.
Okay.
And that business had just boomed during the...
Now,
I must say, interesting discussions took place, including focusing on D2C. How do you expand the marketing team to not just focus on the larger people like your, Amazons and the sort of larger conglomerates who do sales, but even the smaller people? How do you expand the smaller groups? What is the technology that you need to do it effectively? We spoke about ESG, surprise, surprise. So we just speak about ESG. And what do you do in an express logistics company? There was conversation around how fuel savings is being improved because the algorithms being written on route planning have improved. And because of that, how you plan from your pickup, first mile, mid mile, last mile delivery has helped save 10% in fuel costs, because you're using better geolocations and tagging. How that's helping, how we need to improve that. Several new opportunities were discussed as well in terms of potential, what you have an existing network, how do you leverage that? What else can you do with that? Can you tie up with banks and sell, there's a need to do KYC, know your customer, where you pick up physical documents. Can you leverage your existing network and actually do reverse logistics for that? So that came out nicely. So very productive session. I think we discussed maybe 30 odd ideas, zeroed in and said, look, these three make sense. Let's focus on these three. And that's right now under execution and being discussed, tracked by the sort of board.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Thank you, Anand. Let's go back to something we discussed earlier on briefly, just so we can wrap up the sort of the board's role in briefly in terms of risk at the moment. What do you think, given you're saying the dynamic of where the risk register is and things like that, what do you think now boards should be considering and be a priority in terms of risk?
Look, in terms of two things. One, on the risk, make sure that the framework is clearly defined and well understood. That's the first thing you need to do. Ask the question, and who are the people who will be around the table when this is being discussed? That's absolutely the first thing. Second thing is document it and disclose it, because under integrated reporting, investors, other stakeholders will want to know what you're doing. And that's absolutely critical. The key risks, in my view, that are sort of emerging is certainly the usual risks, which have been, sort of around climate change and the impact climate change has on your business. That has gone from, I think, somewhere in the top, between a number five to a number 10 risk 3 years ago to a top five or a top three risk, depending on the company. And I'll give you a couple of examples. Second is around digitization.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Legacy systems, putting it together, and it's easy to use the word digitization, but getting it done is a whole different thing. And third, it would be around your team, employees, people, behavior, particularly the next generation of sort of your staff who are perfectly content working from home.
Yeah.
In that environment, how does the organization culture percolate? Because culture comes from seeing people, talking to people, dealing with, being there physically present. How do you do it in a remote environment? I see an opportunity for a lot of HR firms to actually do something there and figure out how to do this remotely. So an opportunity there after all. And finally, in my view, risk around consumer behavior. How has that changed? What are the risks for you? And what do you need to do to sort of stay ahead and stay on top of the game? Those would be some of the items that I think. This does not mean that the old risks of your currency and commodity price and all that has gone away. It just means that, look, these are probably more front and center.
I think if I recollect correctly, I think earlier on, they also mentioned on the roundtable health. Now, I don't know where that lies in terms of priority, but that was an interesting one.
So when COVID was there, I think the initial part, the first two waves of COVID, health, both employee health and customer health became very important topics. And that's sort of been replaced by mental health of employees.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot more conversation on that aspect as opposed to just because the physical health helped with vaccinations and masks. We sort of figured out how to mitigate it to the best of our ability. But mental health is a much bigger issue.
No, I think you're right. The other one, obviously, which is near and dear to you, is supplies and logistics. Mm-hmm. And that has become a considerable issue on the board, I would suggest. So I think that covers neatly the first area I said we were going to be looking at, which is looking at the board's role in overseeing risk. Let's move on to then, what sort of questions the non-executive directors, INEDs, should be asking about risk? Because in essence, what we've said is this risk register has changed. We're living in a very different world. Therefore, the questions one has to ask and pose, I would argue, would be different as well. What do you think they should be doing as an INED? And you will see this yourself. How have you sort of repositioned the value you bring to the board?
So very often, when you look at risk and talk about risk, it's events which have happened or the impact that it has had. And it's really near term. The ability to look ahead, I think, is very important.
Yeah.
My view, some people do it well, but most probably don't yet because we are living in a world of disruption. And we don't yet know what technologies are sort of going to take our business away or change the way we do things. I'll give you a very simple example, right? You have supply chain disruption today, right?
Yeah.
Which is... what that's done, and one of the companies, I'm not on the board, but I do know them well, they were manufacturing these educational toy robots, which are mini R2-D2s. They move around, talk proactively, listen to you, and so on. It's educational, meant for kids. And they were doing the software in India, the entire hardware in China, right? So my question to them, when I caught up with them recently, was, hey, what have you done about your supply chain? Where is this stuff still coming in from China? They said, look, we were proactive. We actually moved the manufacturing to India. Not only that, they've started doing 3D manufacturing of certain components. So what that really means is the way you do business has really changed. And let me tell you what that means, what potential implication from a very future-looking perspective could be. Today, you have facilities, warehouses. Amazon has warehouses. Others have warehouses with goods in it. Imagine tomorrow if you actually had warehouses with huge 3D printers. Not goods, but printers. And then what you would then do is based on orders, you would have this resin supply, whatever it is, but essentially you would print your order on time and deliver it on time. It changes the way people behave. It is not surreal. I have seen these huge printers. I've been to these factories and seen these huge 3D printers. They exist. It's just not economic today, but there will come a time. I don't know if it's 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, but it will come when it's economical and people change the way we do things. So really, I mean, that's an extreme example maybe. But you need to look ahead as to how changes, how emerging technologies and existing technologies may potentially change your business. Virtual reality, 5G, all of these are coming. They're technologies which are available today, by the way, not tomorrow.
Yeah.
How will these affect your business, right? And I think you need to start thinking about these things.
No, very good. Thank you so much indeed. And a great example as well, and something that when we look back at this podcast in a few years' time, we're going to say, did Anant spot that one? And did we not sufficiently work with it? So thank you for bringing that one, very pertinent one, I'm sure, to the table. There's something that I saw recently, read about some of the questions that it's going back to the basics about what you might be needing to do as a non-executive director. And that's if you designed the agenda, what would be on it? And what is the executive not telling you that you feel you need to know? These are all good things an INED needs to have at the back of their mind. How is the external world changing in ways that are not reflected in your board conversations? What don't you know about the company that you're most concerned about? I've got a few more. What do you see always being discussed but never resolved? I thought that was an interesting one. Always being discussed but never resolved. Are we addressing all the stakeholders, not just the shareholders? And interesting, that came up of particular relevance to one of our attendees at the round table about the shareholders and how their prominence was increasing quite significantly, and therefore the risk associated with that. Final two, how well do we know and trust each other? Obviously a fundamental on as a non-executive director. And how would we describe the organization's culture? Which again, as a subject, was discussed quite extensively around the roundtables about the culture. Mm-hmm. And the what contribution can an INED make, do you think, to the culture? I think it's quite difficult, isn't it?
Well, let me first start by saying what questions should be, how can an INED be better prepared, especially if everything is curated for you? I think if I were to set the agenda, I would certainly have a lot more discussion around peer group companies, which are publicly available data, the sector, and emerging relevant trends in technology that affect our business. In my experience and my best guess today, I don't think enough companies do a good job there. And I think in doing that, that itself will set the, at the board level at least, hopefully what one would call an innovative culture. Think out of the box, see what's happening out there. And insofar as culture and INEDs are concerned, look, I think it's primarily driven top-down, chairman, CEO, and sort of down. The person who's really doing a lot of the heavy lifting, in my view, is the CEO. Board's role is more, I would say, check and balance. Second is in the interactions, informal interactions the board members have with key employees or employees at large in the company. Reinforce that. So it's about understanding the culture and reinforcing it as opposed to doing something, afresh.
Let's move on to the third item that we're going to explore, mm-hmm. which was a framework. And does therefore, given all that we've said, Anna, does the framework within which we are looking at risk, how does that need to change, do you think? I think you've referenced what a framework needs to look like, the structure, but does that need to evolve?
Look, I think the fundamental of, and how do you do it? It's a traditional one of probability of an event occurring, the impact it has, and in the third dimension I would add, obviously, is the time frame. And that's how it's done. That's typically how it's done.
Yeah.
I don't think that needs to change in terms of presentation of information because it's all contained there, right? I think what needs to change is how we discuss it rather than just, and very often we end up talking about mitigating the risks. We need to change the conversation a bit more to see, hey, look, where are the opportunities within these risks?
Yeah.
If you're able to do that, that alone might just change our fortunes.
And is that a cultural thing, therefore, that one needs to change? If you're going to view risk in a different way, you're going to see it as an opportunity. Is that a cultural issue, do you think, more than anything?
It's an organizational behavior issue, in my view.
Yeah.
Because whose job is it to lead the company? It's the CEO. And usually CEO, CXO, they would be hard-pressed to believe that they don't know their business better than anyone else. So the ability or the willingness to be receptive to external ideas by the CXO team, the CEO and the CXO team, I think becomes very important. And how you build that in is very relevant. Because otherwise, in my experience, and again, based on what I've heard, this is curated information going out, and it's more sort of a validation, but no deep discussion. And somehow you need to have at least one session a year, which is a proper engagement just on these topics. the environment, risks and opportunities. And you know, again, as I said, outside of the normal board cycle, it'll help. Along with the strategy day, have it. The strategy and risk are linked, as we discussed.
Final two questions, Anand. First one is, we all know about horror stories where organizations have not got or understood the implication of risk. And I know that very often a chair, when they'll be looking at a non-executive director, will look not only at the rich experience they've had in their career, but also, have they gone through a crisis? Because only when you go through it yourself do you really understand its true implications, what it means. It becomes personal. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what is needed for a board to be fully able and competent to deal with risk, do you think?
I think I come back to the point on the openness and acceptability of new ideas and keeping track of the changes in your environment, how that's potentially going to affect how things are going, and defining risk limits. The financial services industry has been good. They have risk tolerance limits. They know how far to go, et cetera. But a typical normal business may not have it defined very clearly and may be difficult to define. But because of lack of these definitions, you had colossal failures. And I'll go back in time, give you an example. Did you know that Kodak invented the first digital camera in 1975? But they decided that they would not go ahead if you heard their primary film business, right? And there's plenty of examples from BlackBerry and Palm, my favorite PDA, the Palm. I still have mine. Yes. One, it's not charged, obviously, combining with communication. Why didn't you do that? And did you know, I'm sure, I don't know if you wear one of these health trackers on your, the Apple Watch or whatever, but the first people to invent it was actually Nike way back in 2012. And they called it, it was a wearable fitness tracker. It was called the Nike Fuel Band. It didn't do too well. They tried it for a while. The team of 50 people who did it were apparently let go. This is public information, by the way. And so it's a question of really defining how far you'll take a certain process, how much you'll spend. The industry, in my view, which does a really good job at it, apart from sort of core technology, is the pharmaceutical industry, innovative drugs. They have to pour millions and billions of dollars on drug research. They've identified a problem, they're trying solutions, and that's sort of their core strength. So they do a good job, in my view, of actually identifying opportunities and sort of figuring out what the risk tolerance limits are, when to stop for the new drug discovery, when to continue, and so on and so forth, right? If that could be replicated in some fashion in many, many other sectors, that would help.
What for you, is there anything we've missed? What for you would be the final point you'd like to draw to anyone's attention, the subject of risk?
It's dynamic. You have to keep thinking about it all the time. You have to read, you have to keep abreast of changes around you. And risks which were there yesterday may reappear. Risks which are there today, may be huge opportunities. It's just the way of thinking should change. And I would really use the word risk and opportunity together, not just risk. That's how I would sort of see it.
Okay. Thank you so very, very much indeed. And thank you for bringing your critical eye to the subject of risk. Taking a sentiment expressed by Jim Rohn, if you're not willing to risk the usual, you will have to settle for the ordinary. Arguably, no one has the luxury of not taking risks, particularly at this moment in time. So thank you very, very much indeed. And I hope you have enjoyed this podcast.
Thank you, Charlie.